Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM Silver City and KTAL LP 101.5 FM in Las Cruces. This is Donna Stevens, director of the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance, and I am talking with journalist Todd Miller about borders, climate change, and migration. Right before the break, we were talking about how climate change is forcing people to leave their beloved homes in search of survival in a strange country, or sometimes just even within their own country. Let's talk now about some specifics of the changing climate, namely extreme storms and precipitation events. It seems like a lot of climate change impacts involve water. Not enough water or too much water? So we have droughts, floods, and rising seas that are really huge global problems. I wanted to start, Todd, by asking you to talk about rising sea levels, and then we can move on to flooding and droughts. So in your book, Storming the Wall, you say that a third of the global human population lives near a coastline. How many people are we talking about, and where are the most populous and therefore concerning places where people are facing rising seas?
Well, a lot of people, right? You know, so billions of people. And you know, if just all listeners have to do is like look at a world map and look at how many major cities are located near coasts. And you can just think about the United States, like our New York and Los Angeles, right? Two of our biggest cities are right by a coast. And I've seen the projections for New York, right? Like the subway, you know, subway tunnels flooding with water, like happened at Hurricane Sandy. We already have glimpses of this future, right? And it's you have the sea level rise and you have the more extreme weather. But then you have the combination of the both of them. And that's the storm surges, right? I remember when I was doing my research in the Philippines with Storming the Wall, and I was in this coastal town right before the Typhoon Haiyan hit. And I was talking to people in this. I wasn't there right before it hit. I talked to the people in this town where it hit, and they were telling me right before it hit that the Filipino government was talking about a typhoon was coming. And if you're a Filipino, you're like, okay, we know about typhoons, but they didn't know it was going to be the strongest typhoon ever, right?
Right.
That had ever made landfall. And then this other thing that they said that I thought was super interesting was that they said, that they were using the term surge, that there would be a storm surge, and nobody knew what that meant. And so when I went and talked to people, they said they should have called it a tsunami because that's what it was.
Right.
So it was a combination of the sea, because like in other places in the Philippines or across the world, sea level was already noticeably rising. I mean, I interviewed fisher folk in the Philippines, and they were talking about, you know, all the different changes in the sea. But like the whole idea of all this coming together, and I remember one of the people in the town, they pointed up to this really tall palm tree, and many of the palm trees in the town, you know how palm trees grow really, you know, the tall skinny ones that grow really high. A lot of them are decapitated from the storm. So they were just but they pointed to these tall palm trees and said the waves were that high, right?
Wow.
So it was a combination of this what should have been, if there was such a category six storm, and a sea level rise causing the most gigantic waves that people had ever seen. And that's just one example of this one small town who was just completely decimated by this typhoon.
Category six. I thought it only went up to five.
It does only go up to five, but that's the storm was so strong. It was the strongest one ever that, you know, looking into the storm and looking in, I think a number of meteorologists actually said this, if there was actually a category six, and there isn't, like you just said, but if there was, this storm would have been a category six. And since then, actually, that was the strongest storm ever to make a landfall. since then, there's been another even stronger storm that hit Hurricane Patricia that hit Mexico. But luckily, it hit like a very rural area of Mexico. But those sorts of super strong storms combined with the sea level rise, and you could say Sandy was, to go back to that New York example, is just another example of that. Is like a phenomenon that we're seeing. So you can look at, as we were talking about in the previous segment, you know, the slow onset versus the fast onset. But a lot of times those two things come together, right?
Right.
Like you have the slow and the fast all coming together at the same time. And then what gets hit are the coastal cities. And I want to say one more thing about that. I was, because Tacloban, which is the place in the Philippines, was a bigger city. I was at the community I just mentioned was a smaller community near there. But I tell you, I was there a year after this happened, and it actually looked like the city had been bombed. It looked like the city there that a war had taken place in the city. There were so many buildings that were in shambles. There were still so many people displaced. There were so many, like every day, there were super long lines of people waiting to get food, where their food was being distributed by different churches. And I saw all that a year after this happened. So this idea, like this, the feeling of being in a war zone after a climate event of that magnitude was definitely, I even remember going past a bus stop and the sign, and somebody had written SOS on it. Huh. And it must have been from the storm, like saying we're in distress, you know, those sorts of you know, they were all over the place at the time. And so that sort of comparison of what ultimately was a water event, right? A combination of a strong storm and a sea level rise turning into almost this hugely catastrophic event, which I think is comparable to war.
Yeah, I mean, I had kind of separated a couple questions here about flooding and then sea level, but really it doesn't make sense to have them be discrete questions because they just kind of build on each other and exacerbate all the impact. So, I know that in, you know, your book, Storming the Wall, came out in 2017, but it's not like these impacts stopped then, right? Though I know in 2022, there were hundreds of people died and millions were displaced in Bangladesh, Pakistan, the Philippines. Can you just briefly tell us what happened in these populous, low-lying areas and, you know, put it in a larger context?
Well, all those places, like, as I was saying, the Philippines is one of the most vulnerable places in the globe. So when I was talking about Haiyan, since Haiyan, and that happened in 2013, just year after year after year, it just gets battered with typhoons and more, and increasingly so, and hitting different parts of the country that have never been hit before. Bangladesh is a country that is, if you look at the top of the vulnerability, climate vulnerability indexes, usually Bangladesh is at the top. In fact, if for Storming the Wall, I considered going to Bangladesh. Mm-hmm. I didn't, mainly because I have family in the Philippines and I decided to take that route. Yeah. But I strongly consider Bangladesh, and that because it is, it's the way the country, the geographically is placed and its geology, and the way that it's positioned against the sea, and the low-lying areas are, I've seen statistics. I remember I was, again, researching Storming the Wall in a conference of the U.S. military, a brigadier general, he quoted some Bangladeshi generals that he knew that were saying that there could be up to 30 million people displaced in Bangladesh within the next 20 to 30 years. 30 million people.
30 million.
Can you imagine just one small area and one small country? And we might be talking about this later, but India has created a big border wall between Bangladesh and India. So there it is. You know, there's the huge amounts of displacement, and then the country nearby with a border wall. And Pakistan, of course, is in the same area. And the flooding there, I mean, I'm sure like people saw the images from this past summer of Now I'm originally from Niagara Falls, and I'm by the Niagara River watching the rapids, the most vicious rapids I've ever seen, you know, go over the falls, the Niagara Falls. I mean, what we saw in that flooding in Pakistan, I remember just being mesmerized by that video, seeing that flood, like 700 Niagara rivers, right? It was so intense. And those sorts, and really, it's just like all that stuff is exactly what people have been saying is going to happen and was going to continue to happen in the trajectory that we're in. And that's one of the whys why we're talking about it right now, right? I mean, we're every year we're getting more visions of what's happening, but also what's going to continue to happen in the future. And these are the things that will continue to happen in these places and everywhere. These places particularly strong, they're going to hit these places, Bangladesh, Pakistan, and Philippines particularly strongly. But that's these, like, in the status quo, though, that's, you can just predict it, like, oh, this summer this is all going to repeat itself again, so we can just expect more of the same, unless, and we always have to say that, I have to say that more and more now, you know, unless, you know, the future is an X factor and we can change, right? And there can be changes, and maybe some things are set in place, but there are some things that we can begin to do now.
Right. And we're going to be talking more about protecting the status quo in the second part of the show. But right before we take a break, which we do need to do, I just want to ask you a question that was related to what you just talked about with Bangladesh. It's physical, its location, you know, a low-lying area, coastal area. And that's kind of the same case with Central America, which you talk about a lot in your book, Storming the Wall, and how it's extremely vulnerable because it's this narrow strip of land between the Pacific and the Atlantic oceans. And then there's all these farmers and rural people there who are experiencing climate change kind of a lot more than we are in the U.S. Can you just talk about that really briefly? What's happening there?
Yeah. In Storming the Wall, I interviewed a hydrologist who is doing climate modeling in Central America, and he called Central America ground zero for climate change in the Americas. That was his quote, and he's a hydrologist, right? He's looking at both, you know, both extreme amounts of precipitation, like we've been talking about. So when you think, like, if you're to imagine what Central America looks like, it's an isthmus, right?
Right.
That means it's a very thin strip of land. And so you have oceans, right, on both sides of the land, which have spun off massive storms. And I'm thinking that people will remember the storms that spun off the Atlantic Ocean in late 2020, in November of 2020. Eta and Iota, I think, were the name of the hurricanes, back-to-back Category 4 hurricanes. And by the way, those were, I believe, they were either Category 1 or just tropical storms. And because of the increased temperature in the Caribbean and the Atlantic Ocean, the increased temperature, of course, made them intensify in a more rapid manner. And then they just slammed into the Nicaragua and Honduran coasts, and their effects were widespread, right? Like, a lot of what I've looked into with those particular hurricanes, which of course is a huge precipitation event at first and wind event, but then the aftermath, and if you look at what happened to Guatemala, there are parts of Guatemala, mind you, the hurricane didn't even hit Guatemala, but were towns in Guatemala. Now, I remember specifically a town where the flooding was so high that you could only see a steeple of a church coming out of above the surface of the water. So you have those sorts of events, and then you also have extreme drought happening. One last thing, the farmers in Central America, subsistence farmers depend on the rainy season. There's not irrigation systems like in other places. They depend on the rains in the summer to come. And if they're not coming in a dependable way, their harvests will not come either. If the harvests don't come, if their harvests wilt, there's a food crisis. And that's another, those are the two things that have been happening in Central America and probably need to be thought about, especially for people in the United States, considering our U.S. border and why people are coming from the South.
Right. Well, we'll be back in the second half of the show to talk more about that. We'll be talking about borders, climate change, and migration with journalist Todd Miller. So please stay tuned.